Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Author, farmer, and activist Wendell Berry had strong words for proponents of industrial agriculture. He wrote eloquently and prolifically about rural values and the rural economy. A new film looks at his life through his words and through the rural Americans he spoke to and for. Laura Dunn is director of Look and See, Wendell Berry's Kentucky. It airs Monday on SDPB TV, and she joins us now from Austin, Texas. Laura, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you. Happy to be here.
Let's tell people where this title of the movie comes from first, because it's such a wonderful story about Wendell, not only as a person, as a writer, but also as a father.
Yes. So Mary Berry, his daughter, speaks in the film about how her parents raised her and her brother to look and see at all that is around them, to appreciate what is there, to know what plant is healthy, to know what's ugly, to know what's beautiful. And I think it's a profound idea. You know, so often the simplest ideas are the most profound, and that is to be aware of your place, where you are, what is there, and learn to love it. Look and see what's there. And I think in a time when everyone's looking at their iPhones and iPads and screens, it's all the more relevant to actually look right where you are and find value and know your place.
This is about Kentucky, but it's about America. It could be about South Dakota, with the exception of the tobacco crop itself. But those stories that, as I watched this film, I thought you could have filmed the same. You could have met the same kinds of farmers here in our state as well. Did you have a sense when you were directing this that you needed to have that sense of place, because it really feels like Kentucky, but that you were also creating a sense of place for everywhere in rural America?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you read Wendell's work, and he's written more than 50 books now, there is one really strong theme throughout, and that is a sense of place and a love and care for rural communities, rural land-based communities. So, yes, I think one of my executive producers, Terrence Malick, always says to me, in art, you want to see the whole world through a grain of sand. So you look at that one little microcosm, but you're trying really to look through that lens and see a much bigger picture. Wendell also says, I think, really well in the film, he says, you can see all the way to the stars from anywhere you are. So the limits of your own view are not the place where you are. They're the limit of your own imagination and your own understanding. So, yeah, I think that that's really important, is him sitting in his window looking out at the little Kentucky River. He's seeing that place intimately and deeply, and through that, seeing a much bigger picture.
And he talks about that window. He writes about that window and how he created it. You know, it's a grid. You think of, for listeners who haven't seen it yet, individual panes, in a grid pattern, but through it, nothing really fits in that grid. So that window itself and that view itself was something that he considered and contemplated and used to create his art.
Yeah, I was always really fascinated by that window.
Yeah.
And I think as a filmmaker, I'm always looking through a piece of glass also. I'm looking through a lens. So I think a lot about vision and seeing, and sometimes you think you see something, but really you don't. You don't see something. And so I think I asked him a lot about that. And he talks about the tension of being human, and that there's a frame that we look through, that we have a limit to our view because of the frame we see through and because of our human lens. He said, but when you look out onto the natural world, it doesn't follow those grids. It doesn't follow those patterns. It's bigger. It's bigger than we can see. So that tension between us always trying to frame and understand a world that we can't fully comprehend is what that window conveys.
Yeah. You have conversations on camera with Wendell's wife and with Wendell's daughter and with others. We hear his voice throughout we see footage of him. We don't see him right now. Why make that choice?
He made that choice.
Yeah?
Tell me
that story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Wendell Berry does not think that screens of any kind are good for us. He'll tell me that they deaden the imagination. They contribute to the decline of literacy. He thinks that an image often is a dangerous thing because it gives you all the information, whereas a word provokes your own thought to engage and your own imagination to engage. And so a culture of screens is one that he does not appreciate or support. So he quickly made that clear to me. And I said to him, you know, I actually agree with you in a lot of ways. And so we worked through that. And I said, you know, I don't need to film you. I think if you're drawing a portrait of someone, that you can draw the literal face, or you can try to conjure up some little bit of that person's essence. So to me, the fact that he didn't want to go on camera was a really important piece of information. So I said to him, you know, that's a constraint, and documentary is all about finding creative solutions with constraints. And I said, you know, we don't need to film you. I want to look at the world through your eyes. You tell me what to look and see. And he also said, you know, we live in a culture that puts people on pedestals. They make idols of famous people. And he said, that's not true. I am nothing but for the place where I am and the people around me. So I took that really to heart and said, you know, a portrait of this man is really a portrait of his mind's eye, and it's a portrait of his place, that's who he is, and that's who he sees himself to be. So there are a lot of photographs of Wendell and his family, very intimately and beautifully framed by a dear friend, James Baker Hall, taken over the course of many, many years. And we use that to kind of create a sense of who Wendell is visually, but really the film itself is his mind's eye. It's a portrait of what he sees. Mm.
You must have spent some time, you know, in the car or walking, you know, in the woods and wondering, how am I going to do that? How is that going to, how is that restriction or that constraint going to open the door to this film and make it, you know, better than it that would have been if I'd had a traditional? Did you put a lot of thought into that and sort of just kind of mull over that challenge, that creative challenge?
Yes, I did. And I think that to me is why I love nonfiction film, is that there's always these constraints you can't control. And you can either try to control it and you can recreate something or you can force something. But I'm interested in nonfiction form because I want to be a transparent lens on something I wouldn't otherwise see or the viewer wouldn't otherwise see. And so it's very much an exercise in creatively dealing with constraints. And I love that about it. There's so much discovery there. You end up seeing things you wouldn't otherwise see.
Right. Why, for you personally, why Wendell Berry? What was the first time you sort of bumped up against his work or his thoughts and his words that made this a project that you know, that you loved to be a part of, that you just couldn't say no to?
Yeah, well, I was raised by a single mom who was a maize geneticist. I grew up in a lot of university cornfields, and I think she instilled in me very early on a love for the natural world, but also an appreciation for agriculture and people who work in agriculture. And she had me reading Rachel Carson, you know, by the time I was in seventh grade. So I think there were values that were instilled in me early that Wendell Berry, and you know, reflects. And my family is mostly from South Mississippi, and they were pecan growers. So the rural South, farmers, they're just in my blood. I think that when I was working on a feature film, and people ask, when did you first read Wendell Berry? I don't really know. It had to be in high school. And then when I was working on a film here in Austin many years ago with Terrence Malick, he wanted me to find some authors to put a very local story in a broader frame, and he suggested Wendell Berry as one of the writers I should look at. So he pointed me back to Wendell Berry. I discovered some poetry. I used one of his poems. I was fortunate enough to have Wendell do an audio recording of that poem and use that poem in that film. The film's called The Unforeseen, and the title is actually drawn from Wendell's poem. And what I was really surprised at when we toured that film all over the place was how few people knew about Wendell Berry. And to me, it was just a really important voice to hear. He inspires me. You know, his art transcends the despair of all the facts. So he's very inspiring to me to live a committed good life and to find beauty in places I might otherwise only see despair. But he also has a very sobering and important voice, and I think in this context of such a political divide between the rural and the urban, he's a really important voice because he's pointing at this redemptive beauty and complexity in rural places, where most people are now just in these big urban cities and they don't have any real sense of the value of these places. So I just think he's really important, more now than ever.
And he does not mince words, we should say. When you listen to this, you know, he's not just, you know, turning over a leaf and saying, this is lovely. He's saying, this economy is unsustainable. You know, Mary Berry talks about slavery to the land and to the economic system and, you know, a new kind of slavery for farmers. The farmers in the film talk about the anxiety of the debt and how much capital they need, how much it costs to put a film on the ground, how they can't sleep, how, you know, it impacts everything they do. So it's a challenging film in a lot of ways because there's not necessarily, although there's certainly hope and, you know, avenues to talk about the world kind of catching up to Wendell Berry, but there's no easy answer. You can't just step off the carousel and say, oh, I'm going to, you know, do something else. But let's talk about this farmer who sort of, you know, does try to change the world that he's living in. And he finds, I think his name is Steve Smith, if I remember correctly, and he turns to an organic path on his farm. And he finds that there are people who have read Wendell Berry and been captivated by his words and inspired by his words, but had no one to talk to who actually farmed. And so he makes these sort of strange connections of other people who bring Wendell Berry's work to him as a farmer. Tell me about this man, this particular farmer, and his story.
Yeah, Steve Smith's really, I think, an important model for farmers. He is a multi, you know, many generations of subsistence farmers in rural Kentucky. This is not someone who went to an Ivy League college and decided it's a hip thing to come back and farm. You know, this is someone who really comes from a rural place and rural people. I think he finished high school, maybe, you know. He's one of the smartest, well-read people I've ever met. So he's very authentic to the place. And what happened with him is he was in the 80s, just like all of his peers. He was getting bigger and bigger. It was the mandate from the federal government on up to get bigger, get out. So he was leasing thousands of acres, multiple farms, growing large-scale tobacco, using lots of chemicals, which you have to do once you get to that scale. And he just got to a place where he realized all I'm doing is getting deeper and deeper into debt. I'm killing myself. I'm killing the land. This isn't working. So at a time when not many people were sort of envisioning other possibilities, he did. He did a lot of research. He read a lot of books. He visited the Ag Extension office. And he said, you know what? I'm going to change it up. I'm going to grow some vegetables and food right here on 10 acres on my own land. I'm going to stop leasing. I'm going to stop using chemicals. I'm going to be organic. And he wrote a letter to the editor of the Louisville Courier Journal, the major newspaper there, said, you know, I'm a tobacco farmer. Now the tobacco's going out. I'm going to grow food. Will anyone support me? And they did. They signed up in mass. And it turned out to be the first community-supported agriculture, CSA, in Kentucky. He's a true visionary, you know, and taking risks. And within 15 years, he was making much more money per acre than he ever made with tobacco. And he was happy, and he was healthy, and his land was restored. So he paints this picture that's really an economic one. It isn't kind of, you know, self-righteous condemnation of values. It's saying, economically, as a farmer, this model works by far better than the big-scale farming. And he restored his land. He paid off all his debt. He owns his land outright. And he was able to then, after 15 years, stop doing the CSA, and now he's restoring Amish farming equipment. I mean, he lives this beautiful life. And I think it's a testament to farmers in these places not to be judged by some outside force, but to look at your own economic well-being and reimagine what's possible.
Laura, we have
Steve Smith is Wendell Berry's son-in-law now. He recently married Mary Berry. So, it's a beautiful circle there.
That's a fabulous story. We have just a minute or two left, and I want to just close with some thoughts about values, because Wendell Berry is very eloquent in the way he talks about the values of independence and thrift and neighborhood and democracy and kindness. And when I was listening to him really list his values, that thrift thing kept coming back to me. I thought, thrift. Oh, I'm not thrifty. And I felt challenged in my own life to sort of look at my own values and how I live. I'm wondering, for you as a filmmaker and as a human, if any of that sort of contact with him sort of, resonated with you on a deeper level than you expected.
Oh, definitely, without a doubt. And it was Wendell's principles, but then honestly, it was just seeing those values reflected in the people in Henry County. And my husband and I, who worked on the film with me, we have six boys, ages 2 to 12. And I think every day about what so many of those farmers said, and I think Wendell articulates it in his books, but I think the people there reflect it even better. And they say it's a hard life, but it's a good life. And we talk about that all the time, that we live in a culture of convenience. It's founded on consumerism, and ultimately you end up giving up all of your ownership of your own life away, and it's very disillusioning. So I think when you say, I'm going to reclaim my own life by being thrifty, by being independent, by not being so dependent on all the things I can buy and money, but really imagining a different kind of economy for my own home economy, it's very liberating and inspiring and difficult. So, yes, I think about it every day. We're homeschooling our kids. We're trying to live, you know, make art and yet sustain a family. And to do all of that takes a lot of commitment. So I think in some ways we made that film for people who already feel the connection to those values, but like me, need lots of reminders and encouragement to stay the course.
The film is called Look and See, Wendell Berry's Kentucky, and my guest has been Laura Dern, the filmmaker. You can see this film Monday night on SDPB. That's April 23rd. It airs at 9 p.m. Central, 8 Mountain. Can't recommend it enough. Laura Dern, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you.